Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is your host, E. Marcel Portut. Hope all of you had a good night out there, and we are going to review a lot of news and notes in the world of sports today. First, we're going to start off with talking about the NBA playoff games that took place last night between Chicago and Brooklyn, along with the Grizzlies and Clippers game. I'm going to debut my Major League Baseball power rankings. It's been about 2 weeks into the Major League season, or 3 weeks, actually. Time for me to start my baseball talk, so we're going to go over that. I'm going to also review the NFL draft and talk about the defensive players and the interesting perspective on one player going an alternative route as far as representation within his financial team in relation to the draft. It'll make sense when we get to that. Also going to talk EPL action. There are big announcements there, or big actions there. Going to debut a new segment with my podcast of the week. Want to show some love to my other podcasters out there and people that I listen to. And then we'll finally just wrap up the show with other news and notes. As always, we are brought to you by thesportsinquirer.net, the premier website for news and notes in the world of sports. Also by thestartinglineup.net. At both of those websites, you can go there and hear some excellent audio commentary and analysis. And we are going to, as I said, we have done some good jobs in developing some relationships. And this is starting in May. I'll be doing some work with thestartinglineup.net and providing some written and audio commentaries on the site. So looking forward to working with them. As far as communicating with us here and the staff, you can send us an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. Also on Twitter. We are on there under Sports Inquirer, all one word, no dashes, no hyphens. Subscribe to us on iTunes under The Sports Inquirer. You can go there and download our latest episodes, have an excellent archive of everything from the very beginning. So if you want to listen to some old shows and some analysis we've had with Condor, Addison Gray, and Spencer from Sports Minds of America, really some good guests we've had there. And we're going to get some more guests coming up in the next few weeks or so, especially with the draft, NFL draft. We're going to have some good analysis from Condor Addison next week after the draft concludes. And then definitely in May, we're going to have some good guests as well. So really looking forward to some things going on within the website and within the podcast. We're going to take our first break. And when I come back, we are going to review all of the NBA playoff action from last night. Here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. I know Chicago's native son is happy that the Bulls pulled out that excellent victory over the Nets last night. Chicago came into the contest down 0, really in a difficult struggle, down 0-1 in the series to the Nets. Brooklyn looked like a top-flight team. Joakim Noah with some injury issues. Obviously, we know about the Derrick Rose situation. But that was definitely a man-game effort by the Bulls in their 90-82 victory over Brooklyn to tie that series up 1-1. As I said, man game effort from Joakim Noah, who is struggling with the plantar fasciitis. I personally deal with that sometimes, and I'm not a professional athlete running up and down the court trying to win a playoff game, and it hurts me, and I can only imagine what he was going through trying to deal with that. Finished with 11 points, 10 rebounds, and I think 24 minutes of action. Really led the defensive charge of the Bulls. And the biggest factor in that contest was the lack of offense from the Nets. Nets went 2 of 19 from the floor in the third quarter and outscored 22 points to 11. Really struggled in all forms of getting a good offensive flow going. Deron Williams really struggled from the floor for the Nets. 1 of 9 from the field, 0 for 5 from three-pointers. Finished with only 8 points. Brooke Lopez may have had the quietest 21 points you can have from a post player in a playoff game. But once again, I picked this series to go a long way, and I may have even picked the Bulls to win. I have to go to the past and see who I picked to win the series. But this definitely looks like a 7-game series. Bulls are so stubborn as far as their defensive principles that they're going to be in every contest. I think Game 1 was an anomaly as far as letting so many easy baskets go for the Nets. So that series is going to get quite interesting overall. But as I said, that was a really good effort by the Bulls to get the victory on the road. Now the series shifts off to Chicago. And interesting to see Derrick Rose on the bench for the Bulls. I know he's trying to support his team, obviously, and everything like that. For some reason, I have an inkling feeling he's actually going to start playing maybe in Game 3 or Game 4 of this series. I've been on a camp all season for letting Derrick Rose sit out the entire year. Not because his knee is not completely healthy. I do believe he's medically cleared by all the analysis and by the team doctors and everything like that. The problem is that you can't step into the middle of the season and start playing, let alone in the playoffs, without having some potential damage done further. I think he can run up and down the court and practice with the players, and that's good and everything, but he's not in game shape. I don't care how much effort he's put onto trying to get back on the court. He's not ready to come back and play. And furthermore, if he comes back, he's not going to start. He'd probably come off the bench and be in limited minutes. He's not used to that. So despite me saying all of that, I think they're going to find a way to get him on the court. Just looking at him being on the sidelines, I think it's going to happen. So good win by the Bulls. More interesting contest was the Clippers 93-91 victory over the Grizzlies. Chris Paul with the game-winning layup with over Tony Allen with literally about 0.1 second left. And he got a win for the Clippers. Finished with 24 points, 9 assists. Problem with the Clippers, though, it was a lot of hero ball. Charles Barkley made an excellent point about it in the Inside the NBA, the post-game show after the contest. The Clippers got away with it last night as far as just relying on Chris Paul just to make these miraculous shots to get the victory. But long-term, beyond last night, as far as moving on to the next few rounds when they're probably going to face in Oklahoma City or San Antonio, that's going to be difficult for them to deal with. They're not going to be able to get away with that for an entire playoff run. But I do know that what will last is the bench play. As we've been saying in the entire regular season, the Clippers have the best bench in the NBA. Eric Bledsoe really showed me a lot of activity last night. Even Lamar Odom, who actually got crunch time minutes over DeAndre Jordan. If you looked at the final roster that was, or the final unit that concluded the game, you had Paul, Billups, Griffin, and Lamar Odom out there. I mean, I thought that was very surprising to see Lamar Odom getting the crunch time minutes over Jordan. But I guess to be fair, Jordan really struggles with free throws. But Jordan's a better defender, so it was kind of a mixed bag. And you really saw the Grizzlies actually take advantage of that when Mike Conley, who actually finished with a game-high 28 points, did an excellent give-and-go with about 5 seconds left, actually, to tie the game at 91. He ran a high screen on Marc Gasol. Gasol rode to the basket, got an easy dunk to tie the score, and of course Paul got the game-winning layup. But I think you saw the defensive deficiencies of Odom in that play. So it's interesting to see what they do the rest of the way as far as the late game lineup for the Clippers. Zach Randolph, 13 points and 8 rebounds. As I said, I don't know if it's an injury or he's just not physically right. He's really regressed, I think, this season, especially in the postseason, as far as his skills. and they really need him to be a major contributor if the Grizzlies expect to advance towards the next round. So two contests, really good. As I said, I think both of these games show that while the first games of all these first round series, the home team won, some more easier than others, you're really starting to see the complete balance of really the entire NBA. Only time you're going to the only sweep that we're potentially going to see is going to be the Bucks and Heat. That's the only one that I think is going to end in four games. All the other ones are probably going to last at least six. Maybe the Spurs and the Lakers maybe goes to five, especially if the Spurs lay a good smackdown on the Lakers tonight. So we'll see what happens with that series. So really good contest from last night. If you have any analysis or news on it, you want to talk to me about it, send me an email. That's at sportsinquirer@gmail.com or leave a comment on the message board. When I come back, I'm going to debut my Major League Baseball power rankings here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Welcome back to the show. Continuing on with the MLB season so far, here's my top 10 of what I've had seen so far. Number one team, Atlanta Braves, local team. Justin Upton, we've talked about his exploits that he's done over the past few weeks. Most impressive thing, I think, for the Braves, besides the emergence of Evan Gattis, has been the pitching staff. Currently have the best ERA in all Major League Baseball at 2.36 and also in WHIP at 1.09. Starting rotation, when you have Mike Minor, Paul Maugham, and Tim Hudson, that is a deep roster for them to pitch with. Interesting, the injuries that they've dealt with, we all know about Brian McCann. He's been out the entire season, and he's going to eventually make his way back. Freddie Freeman, he has had some rehab stints. He's been playing in Gwinnett with a AAA team. He's going to be, I think he debuts tonight. He was supposed to debut last night or return to the starting lineup. He's coming back. And then you have Evan Gattis and what you're going to do with him. And now Jason Heyward is out with an appendectomy. So they're dealing with some injury issues. BJ Upton, he still has not hit up to his standards. So despite all of that, the Braves, I think, are still the number one team. Number two, I have the Texas Rangers, Yu Darvish. If you look statistically, probably the best pitcher so far this season overall. They have the second best ERA in all of baseball at 2.86. And that's why you think the Rangers are going to stick around for an entire season. Yes, they lost Josh Hamilton and Michael Young to trades and free agency. But with Ian Kinsler and Lance Berkman, who's actually hitting 360 right now, that pitching staff is going to stick around, help them stick around all season. Speaking of pitching staffs, they're going to keep their teams around. My number three team are the Boston Red Sox. Obviously, they've dealt with all the bad stuff that's been going on in Boston with the marathon bombings. But beyond that, you have John Lester and Clay Buchholz, who are really pitching to their potential. while those two are not going to keep up their current rates, if they kept up their current rates, they'd be 25-game winners and Cy Young champions and top five ERA and strikeouts. That's not going to last. However, if they can be consistent as far as a 1-2 punch, and then also with Bailey as the closer, that pitching staff can keep it together, the Red Sox might actually win the AL East, and that'd be really bad egg on my face because I picked them to finish last. So Mike Napoli and Will Middlebrooks providing a lot of offense. That was a big grand slam by Napoli in the win over the A's last night. So Boston looks like they're rolling right now, doing really well. Number four, I have the Nationals, who actually have not that stellar of a record right now. But when you look at their roster, they're going to get it together. Bryce Harper, I actually got to sit down and watch a few of his at-bats Saturday when the Mets were on. Mets-Nationals game from Citi Field on Saturday was on Fox. Outstanding approach to the game. We see all of the highlights when we watch the highlight shows, him hitting the long home runs, pulling it towards right center. He had two opposite field hits that were so impressive during that contest. One was a home run and also was a double down the line. He really keeps his posture and will drive the ball to opposite field. I was really impressed with that. So once he gets going, and LaRoche, Jason Worth, he's streaky, he's going to have his good moments. They're going to be right there. Number five, maybe the surprise of all of Major League Baseball, the Colorado Rockies, who they've played a light schedule. They faced Milwaukee and San Diego, I think, eight or nine times so far this season. But they've won the majority of those games and just lost their first home game earlier, I think on Sunday. But Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki, they're staying on the field so far. If they can stay healthy, you know they're going to score runs. They're currently third in Major League Baseball with 104 runs scored. But their pitching staff is 15th right now in ERA, which is respectable. The NL West is a nasty division because I still think the Giants are going to find their way to win it. And the Dodgers, you can't ignore them. I think they're going to have their presence felt in that as well. But Colorado, they're jumping off to a good start. If anything, they're making a case for the wild card because every one of these games count. We always look towards the end of the season and you finish the season bad. It's just important how you start the season. And for some of these teams that are starting off really bad, like the Angels, while you know that they're going to maybe average out and get to their 85, 90, 95 wins, if you get off to a bad start like Anaheim has, you can knock off a few of those wins and then you miss the postseason. So Colorado, I'm really impressed with what I've seen from them so far. Number six, I have Oakland. They lead the AL in runs per game. I don't think that's going to last. Jed Lowry and Coco Crisp have been really good for them. They need to get their pitching together a little bit more. And if they do that, they can maybe be a spoiler in the AL West. Number seven, San Francisco Giants. Last night was really a typical Giants game. Good starting pitching from Vogelsong. Timely hitting two-run homer by Buster Posey to tie the game in the bottom of the eighth. In the end, they had to shut the bullpen them down. I said Vogelsong went seven innings, and then the rest, they allowed no more runs the rest of the game, led by Sergio Romo, who actually got the win in the contest. That's a typical Giants game. Good pitching, timely hitting, and another victory. And that's another team. If they make, once again, they make the postseason, they're going to be a nasty bunch. They're starting pitching with Lincecum, Matt Cain, Barry Zito, who arguably could be a Cy Young contender. I know it's really early, first month of the year, but Cy Young contender for the Giants. And then I said Vogelsong, and they got Bumgarner as well. Incredible starting pitching for the Giants. So they're sticking around. They're number eight, or number seven. Number eight, I have the Reds. They lead the league, or lead Major League Baseball, and they have the most runs scored so far, 111. And Joey Votto has not even started hitting like Joey Votto, taking a lot of walks. If he starts getting going, they're going to run away with the NL Central. And then finally, to round it out, number 9, the Cardinals, and number 10 is Detroit. As I said, every time I do a baseball segment, you're going to hear about the state of the Mets. Mets are doing decently so far, 9-8. Fourth in runs scored at 99. They actually lead in runs scored per game, which is surprising, with a lineup that looked at the start of the season to be very anemic. But Lucas Duda, Daniel Murphy, and John Buck have really contributed in surprising ways to the lineup. The thing that concerns me about the Mets, if you're looking at long-term, the pitching prospects outside of Matt Harvey. And Harvey's been outstanding, 4-0. First pitcher, actually, in baseball's modern era, so going in since 1900, to win his first four starts while allowing no more than 10 hits in those four starts. Now, he's been outstanding. Really interested, it was interesting to see Friday night. It was a really good series between Washington and the Mets overall this weekend. Friday night, you had Dwight Gooden, who we talked about before was my childhood baseball hero. He was actually in the stands to watch the Steven Strasburg-Matt Harvey contest, and he actually talked to the MLB Network after the game and compared their two styles to kind of what his approach was back in the early to mid-80s when Gooden was the most dominant pitcher in all of baseball. So seeing all of that, the pitching struggles, I think, for the Mets outside of Harvey is going to be a major problem for them. But right now, they look like they're doing pretty good. I said 9-8 is a really good start for the Mets when considering I thought they may finish last place in all of the in the division. So those are my power rankings. If you have any thoughts on those, you have the outlets to contact me, and I'd love to hear from all of you. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our NFL draft preview by talking about the defensive players and talking about a prospect on the defensive side, actually, who is taking a unique approach to his player representation in relation to the draft here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. I said the NFL draft is less than 48 hours away. Lots of news and notes. We talked about the Darrell Revis trade yesterday and then analyzed that. Talked about James Harrison also going to the Bengals. Not too much other news as far as player transactions go. But looking at the draft overall, we talked about the offensive players yesterday. And I said it was very offensive tackle heavy. This situation as far as the top half of the first round, very defensive tackle heavy itself. Sharif Floyd, Star, Lutulele, they're getting probably top 10 grades. My favorite player, actually, as far as all of the defensive guys, I like Lutulele. Unfortunately, his heart issue, I know they've tested him out, and I guess he's going to actually be okay with his heart ailment to play. that's just very concerning to me as far as drafting someone who has a heart issue. I hope it works out for him overall, but I like him. Deion Jordan, I'm not too big of a fan of. I mean, he's had some flashes and some decent moments at Oregon, but to stake a top five pick on him, I do not see the value of that. Dee Milliner is one who I'm really impressed with. If the Jets get him at 9, that'd be really good for them. I think that'd be a perfect spot for him to go. Obviously, with the trade of Darrell Revis, they need another cornerback. I think Dee Milliner has a chance to be a major player in the draft. As far as the rush players go, I love Mingo out of LSU. That's a player that I think, and he has some good versatility as well, especially if you play a hybrid 3-4 or 4-3. He can put his hand down, and he can also stand up. I was really impressed with him at LSU. The Jarvis Jones situation, big story seems like with this draft, a lot of injuries, whether it was something that was found during the season or in between the end of the college season and coming up to the draft. And then you have guys like Jarvis Jones, who, unfortunately for him, he has the spinal issue that caused him some issues when he was playing at USC. He stayed healthy for the most part in relation to that at Georgia, and I thought was maybe the best linebacker. I thought he was the best linebacker in all of college football last season. But obviously, if you have a spinal issue, that's something you have to really be careful with. That's just speaking, obviously, in relation to that. But I think him being a mid-round grade, that'd be a steal for anybody. Because I think as far as talent goes, he should be a top five pick. But I know the spinal issue is an issue for a lot of teams. But I like Jarvis Jones. If I was a top 10 team, I would take him in a heartbeat. That would definitely be a pick I would make. And then as far as the rest of the teams go, we've gone over Teo a lot. And feel kind of bad picking on the guy. But I keep seeing these first round grades. I just don't see that happening for a slow middle linebacker. And I'm off on a little tangent here as well. They talk about his leadership skills and everything like that. While I appreciate a player that has his head together and is focused on being the best he can be, I think those leadership characteristics should not overvalue the actual skill level of your play. Because the reality is, this is an athletic activity. And if you don't have the physical skills to compete, it's kind of like the Tim Tebow rule. Everyone talks about Tim Tebow and his leadership and the value he has in the locker room. But he can't play. You can't be a valuable leader and be the instrumental part of the development of your team if you cannot play or be on the field consistently. So while Teo and Tebow and other guys may have good personalities and help your team out as far as helping to lead a path, if they can't get on the path themselves, how are they helpful? So those are my thoughts on the defensive players overall in the draft. I want to talk about another issue as well. I read a really good article on Forbes.com about Matt Elam, the safety prospect coming out of Florida. He is, I think, the only player so far, and this may have changed within the last 24 to 48 hours, as far as a first-round prospect, because he's going to be a first or second rounder, he has that high of a grade as far as where he'll get taken. He is the only player that currently has not signed a standard representation agreement with an NFL Players Association certified contract advisor. What that means is he has not signed an agent, in essence. The typical practice for all these college players is once they graduate or declare for the NFL draft, they pick an agent, or they sign with an agent. The agent sets up the pre-draft training for them, some pro days, interviews with with NFL administrators. But he is handling it on his own. His brother, Abe Elam, is actually an NFL veteran and has played on several teams and for about the past 4 or 5 years and is serving as an advisor for his brother, Matt. The smart part about this is that Elam will not have to pay up to 3% of his salary to the agent. And this is a move I've never understood why more players don't go this route. Especially when you consider that now, in 2013, there is a rookie salary scale. It's not like back in the olden days, so I'd say like about 5-10 years ago, where there was no salary structure as far as where you would be signed. Now it's slotted. So whether he's picked 10th or 30th or 60th overall, it's slotted as far as how much he's going to make. And sure, there may be subtle nuances as far as how many guaranteed years, maybe the signing bonus, things like that. I think he could just hire a lawyer, pay an hourly fee. And I was racking my brain all night and all day yesterday. I thought it was Ray Allen who did this, but it was a player who, I think it was an NBA, who didn't hire an agent when he was doing his contract negotiations. He just hired a lawyer and paid him an hourly fee. It saves you so much money. I would personally rather pay the $2,000-$3,000 to have the lawyer look over my contract over 3 or 4 hours, which is what they're paid to do, than to pay the $50,000 to $100,000 just so that they can read over the same thing. So I think it's a really smart move by Elam, especially considering that he has a brother who already plays in the league. So he's not coming into this with his eyes completely closed. He knows what to expect when he goes into the NFL. And as an agent, only thing an agent may help with some contract negotiations as far as endorsements with a clothing company or soft drink or things like that. But in relation to your rookie deal, the agent really isn't going to provide as much wisdom or as help as all these guys are steered to believe. So a really interesting view on that. Search that on the story of Matt Elam on Forbes.com and his discussion and reasoning behind that. I thought it was really good to see another perspective on the draft and what these players are doing. When we come back, this is our last break of the show. We are going to review some EPL action and other things in the world of sports here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. So a lot going on in outside of the United States as far as the sports season goes. Conclusion of the EPL season is in full swing. Manchester United clinched the Premier League title yesterday with an impressive 3-0 victory over Aston Villa, with Robin Van Persie scoring the hat trick. It's going to be United's 20th league title and a 13th EPL championship for Sir Alex Ferguson. Hurts me as an Arsenal fan in several ways. One, anytime United wins, that's not fun. As I said, I'm a gunner for life, and United's always a big rival for the team. But secondly, seeing Robin Van Persie scoring the hat trick, I knew he was going to leave Arsenal at the end of last season. And I wouldn't mind him heading to maybe Spain or going to Germany, or even back to Holland. I knew he wouldn't go back to Holland, but anywhere but United out of all teams. I'd rather him go in the City, believe it or not, than go to United. Because that City's mantra is just to sign all of the top players and build from there. But it hurts to see Arsenal going their eighth season without a trophy. Not even an FA Cup or a charity shield or anything like that. Heck, last time they competed for the Champions League title about 5 years ago. They lost to Barcelona. Outside of that, they haven't even been close to anything. And it's a talent level issue. There are two things. One, I think the Arsenal ownership, they're so content with being in the top four as far as making the Champions League. The worst thing that I think can happen for Arsenal this year is to finish in the top four. And I know we all as fans have been there. I think in the United States, I'll relate it to your professional team and the draft. You know your team is not going to win a championship. They're not even going to make the playoffs. So when you get to that certain point, and I've been there as a Knicks fan plenty of times, and even as a Mets fan to a lesser extent, when your team is struggling at such a high level, you need to lose some draft picks, or you need to lose to get more draft picks or get a better pick. I know you can't tell a competitive athlete to tank a game and to lose it, but deep down, and you want your team to lose a few more games than they win to get better positioning. I think the only way that changes are going to happen at Arsenal is if they finish out of the top four. Because if they keep finishing in Champions League position, and they're going to finish in the top four this year, most likely. They have United, actually, Man United coming up this weekend, but after that, their last, I think, three games are very winnable. Until you see change, until they lose enough to get out of that money, they're gonna keep the regime intact. And it's tough to see. I mean, I'm used to seeing players like Ian Wright, Dennis Bergkamp, who still is my favorite EPL player ever as far as Arsenal players go. Seeing David Seaman, sees Fabregas, RVP, Thierry Henry, Petit, Campbell. We've had so many. Arsenal's had so many excellent players over the years that have led them to championships and to trophies, and to see it not happening now is very disheartening and disappointing. So that's my soccer talk, and as I said, I'm just an unhappy Arsenal fan right now. I also want to debut another segment. We're going to do podcast of the week. I think once a week I'm going to talk about another podcast that I listen to, and just this whole, and I'll just talk a little bit about the career path and where I'm going and how it relates, I think, to podcasting. Interesting path that's been happening for me personally. My background has been in media relations for athletic teams in Belmont and College of Charleston. We've talked about that before. But growing up, the dream has always been to be in the sports journalism field. First, it was to write for the Daily News and have a column there, like Mike Lupica and some other legendary guys, Peter Vesey and so forth. Those are guys I grew up reading on a daily basis, whether it was riding on a train to school or at night. So the dream was the newspaper. This was back in the late 80s, early 90s. That dream has kind of dissipated a little bit. I still got to do some newspaper writing. I do some freelance work here in Atlanta for Marietta Daily Journal and enjoy covering the prep sports. And I still get a kick out of seeing your name in print. I still have that nostalgic feeling in me. I always enjoy it because the way it works is I cover the games usually on a Friday night. So I cover the game, I write my story, get my quotes and everything. And Saturday morning I go out and actually get the paper. And it's always cool to see your name in print. I still keep an archive of a lot of those papers on there or in the house. So that was a dream at first. Then growing up in New York and being tremendously influenced by WFAN and Mike and the Mad Dog and all of those guys as far as sports talk radio. And it was, because it's interesting, and I don't know if kids do this now. Maybe it was just me as far as my perspective on things. While a lot of my friends were listening to, not listening to music and and things like that. After school, it was always a rush to get home to listen to the afternoon sports talk radio and listen to Mike Francesa and Chris Russo and that whole crew. And I'm kind of disappointed that they've broken up and they're going their separate ways. Just as a sports fan, I enjoyed those two together. Yes, they had their nauseating moments and could be a little overkill on certain topics, but I grew up on it, so I'll always have love for those two together. And they do a good job individually. They're both doing their separate path. But now you look at the landscape in 2013. Outside of in my car, maybe driving to the gym or the store or wherever, I hardly listen to the radio, let alone sports talk radio. And there's some excellent analysts here in Atlanta. I think Atlanta gets a bad rap as far as being a sports town. It's just we have in the city, and I'll say we, I've been a native here for a few years now. We just have different interests in comparison to a lot of other markets. The college sports scene is highly present here, particularly in the SEC. And that's where you look at outsiders. And even me growing up in New York, even my fellow New Yorkers, I still have friends and family up there. They'll look down in the South and it's like, your sports scene is weak, because they'll see the Braves games and the Hawks games and there'll be a whole debate about that. But I'm like, look at the games at Alabama or Georgia, LSU, Clemson, Georgia Tech. You know, you go down the line, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Tennessee. Look at all the teams that are represented here in the Southeast, especially in Atlanta. Atlanta's really the college football capital, I think, of America. And furthermore, I think maybe college sports in general. There's a representative of every team here, every college. I mean, you can go to any bar, you see a Michigan fan, a USC fan, and there's a Texas person around. I've talked to people that are fans of Washington and Penn State and Ohio State, Florida. You go all around the country and you'll find a fan of every team here. Just the city of Atlanta has a lot of transplants, including myself. So what I'm trying to say with all of that is, you look at the current landscape of, I think, sports media and sports writing and sports talk radio. It's really become, I think, very specific and very centric. I go to certain podcasts because I want to hear about the baseball breakdown or football breakdown. We kind of have a unique approach here as far as what we do here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. We cover a lot of sports and we cover national issues, but if you've been listening for the past month or two, there are about five or six specific sports that we talk about all the time. And we mix it up based on the seasons not going on. We're going to talk a lot about college football, but obviously college football is not going on right now. So in the fall, it'll be a bunch of college football. We're not going to talk as much NBA because the NBA season will be over. But looking at how things go overall, my approach about it is I just like to talk about general topics and get directly to you. And then this is how it ties into the dream of what I'm trying to do. 15 years ago, the dream would have been, to work for a local sports station and maybe intern and move up the ladder and go up the charts and eventually get, maybe read the updates to every 20 minutes deal and maybe eventually get a weekend show and then get my own show. While that would be enjoyable and the finances would appreciate maybe some stability along those lines, I just look at sports talk radio as very archaic and just very formulaic. I like talking in a free-form way as far as if I go 5 minutes talking about one subject, that's fine. Or if I go 2 minutes talking about it, that's acceptable too. I just don't like the breaks of we talk for 4 minutes and we gotta get commercials in. As I said, I talk about some of the sponsors or some of the things I'm doing in the very beginning of the show. So we get, you know, we take care of that. But after that, you don't really hear about the sponsors and everything like that and hearing all the incessant commercials. We do music breaks because music is a big passion of mine as well. But besides that, we try to keep the conversation flowing. And inspiration for all of this is my first inductee or first podcast of the week honoree. And that's the Joe Rogan Experience. Joe Rogan is a stand-up comedian. Also a the fight commentator for UFC events. He is actually the inspiration for me doing a podcast. It's funny because I heard of his podcast actually from another one, and that'll be my next inductee as far as a internet radio show. And they mentioned, oh, Joe Rogan has a show that he does. He talks about just a lot of general things. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot and I'll listen. And ever since then, it's become appointment listening for me. I listen to it in the gym. I listen to it when I'm doing my other activities. Really opened my eyes to the format of a very free-flowing conversation. And I really recommend that all of you listen to it. It's interesting because you look at him as the UFC guy and talking MMA. I really wasn't too familiar with his stand-up comedy. But ever since listening to the show and having all of his guests like Duncan Trussell and Joey Diaz and Bert Kreischer, Bert has an excellent podcast as well, and you know, seek him out. It's really opened my eyes to the new format of what people are listening to. Both, and also with profanity, is very not safe for children. There's a lot of cursing, and actually I could curse on this show as well. I'm not much of a cursor. It's uncensored, but he throws a lot of bad words in there, and I enjoyed that as well, just the lack of censorship, you know, in it. So I highly recommend that you listen to the Joe Rogan Experience, and it's a really good podcast to listen to. So that concludes the show for today. When we come back next time, probably tomorrow or Thursday, we are going to talk more about the NBA playoffs. We got 3 games tonight. We have Milwaukee and Miami, Boston and New York, and Golden State and Denver. So 3 really good contests coming up tonight. Gonna start my preview of UFC 159, which is headlined by the John Jones versus Chael Sonnen main event for the UFC light heavyweight title. NHL season is concluding this week, so I'll talk about some NHL thoughts as well. And finally, we're going to do our general topic outside of the world of outside of the lines, or in essence, and talking about sexuality in sports in 2013. Looking forward to having a good conversation about that as well. So thank you for listening to the show. Always, as always, head over to thesportsinquirer.net for more information and notes from us. Until then, good fight, good night.